Off the Ball Breakfast.
I find it funny your analogy for this Champions League is that it's a sinking ship.
Well, am I talking about the world or am I talking about football? Either way, Atalanta are getting out.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The news run on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome along. It is Off the Ball on this Thursday. We've got a packed show between now and 10 p.m. Pearl Slattery, Shelburne captain's going to talk to us. We'll talk also with the Derry City camp ahead of the President's Cup, where they take on Shamrock Rovers this coming weekend. Elsewhere in the football show, it doesn't get much better than the 97th minute. A goalkeeper is sent forward to score a goal that sent Benfica through at the very last second. Put Real Madrid outside the playoffs in the Champions League. It's a bloated format, but football generally comes through. Elsewhere in the football show, we'll be talking about Arsenal's wobble against Manchester United last weekend and Liverpool's situation. They fly through in Europe, but their struggles continue in the Premier League. Later this hour, we will have Paul Murphy, Kilkenny hurling legend, with us. He's going to talk about round two of the National Hurling League. He became a dad himself this week, and he will talk about lifting a cup, which was named after his late father as well. And Richie McCormack will be along. Transfers. It's almost the end of transfer deadline and getting to next week. He's going to talk about some of the best transfers that never happened. He's called it Sliding Doors. It's not a film podcast. He's talking about transfers that almost happened. Cameron Hill, when I said that Richie McCormack was coming back, didn't mean he was taking your seat.
No. A shiver went down my spine. But it's happened before.
You think I've gotten early night?
Yeah, well, exactly. And he's been in on the news round since, where it's been two-headed, where we've had like, I thought I slayed him to get this role, but here we are.
Dean Fanning's with us as well. Dean, how are you keeping?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I've basically got over the excitement of the end of that. I've just about got over the fact that a goalkeeper heads the ball in that game after we went off air.
Yeah. I don't like NFL kickoffs. You've been talking about it, you know, you have been talking about it since I came in, that you just went off air and the magic happened. But, you know, that's just what can you do? Just let it go.
I remember similarly, we were in here the night of the remontada. Barcelona's comeback against PSG, which went beyond the clock as well. And we were sitting there going, who knows, maybe they'll score. See you tomorrow night. But sometimes, unfortunately, these 8 o'clock kickoffs just bleed the wrong side of the arrow.
I know.
Kenny Cunningham was here going absolutely ballistic at the TV across the way. And we just had to go back on YouTube and just say, right, let's just get Kenny vision on what has happened on Barcelona 6, PSG 1. You just can't step away from it at that point. But yeah, I don't know. Like, again, look, the group phase, I mentioned bloated on the intro. That's what it is. You play a string of games, they're all disconnected. But at the end of it, it is magic when you see a goalkeeper going forward and heading the ball in.
It's fantastic. It was a great, great moment. And the fact that Real Madrid were involved, it was, I think they were already out of the top eight, but it was still even more humiliating for them. And the fact, the golden fact that Jose Mourinho was involved, I think, was just what made it so special for everybody, just to see Jose back. And, you know, we all so many of us have the deeply, deeply complicated relationship with Jose Mourinho. But when we see him, when those moments come, you know, we go, maybe this time it'll be different. Maybe this time it'll be pure and won't get turned nasty and dark and toxic. But, you know, That's what happens in all, you know, all these kind of great love affairs.
How complex is your relationship with Jose Mourinho, Cameron?
Listen, myself and Jose go a long way back. I've never actually met the man, but I don't know. I think in the wake of what's happened further afield in the rugby world this week, there was a scary similarity between what happened with Bundiaki and the officials and what Jose Mourinho did in a car park to Anthony Taylor all those years ago, and the confrontation. Those sides you always get reminded of with Jose, despite the sort of romanticism of going back to Portugal after being bombed out of Turkish football earlier this year and it not going quite the way he wanted.
It's an interesting parallel, because we all remember when he got into the laundry basket at the Nou Camp and everyone thought this was the most genius thing of all time. He was banned because he abused an official and went into the referee's room.
Yeah.
We're all going, what a scamp.
Mm.
No, he was the enemy. He was the enemy of football back then. We know. And he hasn't really, has he? I don't know how much he's mellowed. I don't think, or is it just the opportunities for that stuff aren't there anymore? But that's the whole, that is the thing. That is, and we might talk about this later, but that is the hook of Mourinho, that we can't help ourselves. You know, when he appears It's like, yeah, here, this is going to be, this is, you know, we're here for a good time. We're not here for a long time. Like that's what happens whenever Jose comes into view. Has
the Overton window maybe changed as well? That the things we are constantly outraged and disgusted by in football and everything, it's changed so much that like we long for the days now where Mourinho was the thing that was like driving us insane.
Well, probably, yeah. There's something to be said for just there are so few, like there are so few charismatic figures in, especially in English football today. Like, there's no, like the great, you know, the head coach era, the sporting director of football era is kind of just running these people out of the big clubs. And like, so Mourinho is a reminder of when it was all like to the detriment of everything, including the football. Like the football was worse. But you know, there was these amazing personalities, and I covered so many Mourinho press conferences when I was in London, like, and the kind of the drama that would build around them, and the, you know, Mourinho, like I remember one afternoon when he threatened to walk out, and he was walking. And he'd done his daily press conference, he'd done his Sunday press conference, or he'd done his TV press conference, and we were doing a Sunday press conference. So it was like, what else are you going to say? And I remember thinking, let him walk out. I can't remember what the beef was, but he was walking out. But he was walking out so slowly because he wanted somebody to call him back. It was just
two and a quarter.
It was like, yeah, I tell you, if you don't apologize by the time I count to 10, I'm not coming back. And everyone was like, Jose, come back. You know, finally he turned around and came back. And I was like, walking out would have been much more fun. We should have. But there was always, the amount of times there was something that you got, and that entertainment and that personality was kind of extraordinary.
He also had a very, very surreal relationship with some of the British journalists too. Like I think the Custer Creams being brought up to Jose. Custer Creams.
Trevor Welsh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very weird.
Well,
I think Henry Minter might have brought him Custer Creams as well.
I don't remember that. I remember the...
apparently he couldn't get them abroad, so when he came back to England for a game...
Oh, maybe he did, yeah, yeah.
Custer Creams.
No, there was definitely the... there was that, you know, well-known phenomenon of just disproportionate laughter as well whenever...
But you meant when, joke.
Whenever, but the thing with Mourinho was he also was funny.
He's great.
He is funny. Like he is. He's not like. It's not when like when Arne Slot makes a joke, and then that is undeserved laughter. But when Mourinho said things, it was funny. But he was nasty. He was vicious. He was toxic. All these things that we know about him. You know, I was there during the time when Wenger was there, and the things he said about Wenger, and there was a genuine antipathy towards Wenger and for Wenger towards him. Because from Wenger's point of view, because of the stuff Mourinho had said, but all of that is true. All of we know how it's going to end every time, but it doesn't mean that there isn't a part of us when something like Wednesday night happens that you don't think, Joseph, where have you been?
John on the WhatsApp has used the bingo word I was expecting here. Jose was box office. The good old days long gone. It's all accountants now. John in Limerick. The WhatsApp, by the way, is 087-918-8180. But there's also apparently the kind of things the top teams have never had a more bland set of managers than right now. Ernest Lott's not the most exciting guy. Leimer Sr. is like the guy from Diary of a CEO podcast with some of the stuff that he comes out with. There's no Alex Ferguson, obviously, at Manchester United. Michael Carrick is now an interim manager. Thomas Frank isn't the most exciting guy either.
Arteta, Guardiola, like we're a far cry from Antonio Conte and Thomas Frank and the handshake.
Yeah.
That was a dramatic flare-up. And that's maybe, 5 years ago now at this stage?
Yeah. Oh, well, keep the comments coming in. Before we get into the news, because again, it looks like another Irish player might be missing for this day next week when the Six Nations kicks off. I want to chat to you, Dion, about summer football, because we've been talking about this all week. And you're obviously chairman of a club at the moment, so you've got the kind of hands-on experience of it. Ooh, as part of me, I sent Owen Doyle last night that it felt when Mark Cannon presented his plan around the calendar and the fact that basically summer football would be aligned across the country and be aligned pretty much from top to bottom, there was a democratic decision made, even though many leagues disagree with it and individual clubs may have disagreed with it. And then the FAI just softened that position. And it feels like we're now in a slightly muddled sense. And then when we hear Tommy Martin on the show the other night saying that his young girl has only had 2 games in almost 2 months because pitches are called off and they're finding it very difficult to get them. Where is summer football or aligned football actually at now?
I think it's still part of the dream, but I think, and I like what Tommy has said I agree with it obviously, and I've talked with Tommy about this before, and like I think that what is really needed for summer football or anything else to happen is a kind of a huge cultural shift in how football operates in Ireland, because I understood people's, and I understood it from within our own club and within lots of clubs, people's concerns about the things that they have concerns about every week when you're running a football club. Like, we have to get referees for matches. There's a person, and it's always one, you know, unless you're an incredibly well-resourced club, it's always one person who is at 11 o'clock on a Friday night still trying to get referees for that weekend. And there aren't enough referees to go around. Everyone knows that the biggest crisis in Irish football, when it isn't the weather, is getting people to referee games, because, in part, because of the behaviour of people during matches, because of the behaviours of coaches and parents especially, not the kids, because of the behaviour of people on the sidelines. And, you know, you sometimes see things, I can see why you wouldn't referee. So the reason, one of the reasons that summer football encountered resistance was because people said, well, you know, if it's this hard to get referees the rest of the year, you just throw in 5-10% of people going on holidays, whatever it is, over the course of a summer. It's going to make it harder. Now, the plans would have allowed for that. All those things would have allowed for it. But what I'm saying is we need to just, and Will Clark from the FAI came out to our club last week and gave a brilliant talk about this, and like about the FAI plans. And I think one of the things we need to just look at is stop, like there are so many regulations and rules that stop people playing as well. Mm. Play more non-competitive football, play matches, play more small-sided games. I'm chairman of the club, as you say, but also coach my son's under 12 team. We play 9-a-side at the moment. Next year we're moving to 11-a-side, like at the age when kids are 12. It's ridiculous. You don't need to play 11-a-side football when you're 12. Bigger pitches, more demand for resources. When you have fewer pitches because there aren't enough of them to go around, those kids could still play 7-a-side football. They could do, there's lots of things they could be doing that would still be football. But because we have to have certain types of games, certain types of league matches, certain types of cup matches, games that are refereed, it creates this structure and this rule-based system that is hard to maintain at the best of times. And then you throw in something like what's happening now with the weather and it falls apart. So I think if we're going to move, and I think the resistance, the reservations is a better way of putting it, because I think a lot of the reservations were in good faith and people who had genuine concerns about how this would operate. But it takes, it really just, there needs to be a huge cultural shift in terms of how we think about Irish football. And I think, I feel that somewhat, in some ways that is the huge challenge, because it's actually to do with, it doesn't matter. Like, I know, like, we're all guilty of it. Like, it doesn't matter if you win this match. It doesn't matter if if you're under 12's fourth division team lose a game. Like, it doesn't really, you know, like, all these kind of things that are taken way too seriously by parents and coaches, including myself at times. You see this happening all the time. And, you know, you'll be texting coaches and going through teams, and the kids have done 10 more things in the day and they've forgotten about the result. Like, they'll be in tears at the end of it, but they'll be, you know, you get them a hot chocolate in the stand outside afterwards, and they've forgotten about it. So somehow dialing down how seriously we take it would actually to say, let's play seven-a-side football for longer. Let's play small-sided games for longer. So we don't need to say, oh, we've got seven under 13 teams that need to play on full-size pitches every week when we don't have those pitches. So, like, I'm all in favour of, like, there's a huge amount of stuff that needs to be done. I also think there's a huge amount of stuff that needs to be done at government and local government level. And I read the story about, like, Mountjoy Square and the plans that were, the sports plans that were there and which now seem to have been parked, you know, because they want to restore it to its sort of Victorian splendour. Which is a wonderful idea.
Project in itself, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, you need to be practical and ask, if you have pitches there, if you have an all-weather surface there, what is going to draw people in the best sense of the word to that park? What is going to get people there using it in a way that is life-affirming and, you know, apart from people, you know, getting too angry on the sidelines, is actually... what we want to see in our public spaces. And like, that's the thing, you know, allowing all weather in Ireland, you have to loosen where you put all weather pitches, where you let them sit alongside these things in a way that you might think, well, this spoils the aesthetic of, you know, there was no all weather pitches in Mountjoy Square in the 1890s.
But the greater good may well be your
dissertation. But it's just better. So I think those kind of things as well. So I think there's a huge piece in it as well. And like then, the frustrations of it obviously are huge. So I think let's move to summer football. But I think as part of that, you need to actually just try and shift how we operate in football in this country.
So Cameron, the news from Portugal, who's out for next week?
Well, Tadhg Furlong is in a race to be fit, so not quite out just yet, Will, but he suffered soft tissue damage on his calf during Leinster's Champions Cup win over Bayern earlier this month, and he reportedly did not take part in training with the rest of the squad at their warm weather camp in Portugal this morning. He was separate, doing rehabilitation on that calf issue. Ireland assistant coach Andrew Goodman refused to rule him out when speaking to media today, adding that the team are being really cautious about Furlong's recovery. Head coach Andy Farrell already has a selection headache on the other side of the scrum, with Andrew Porter, Paddy McCarthy and Jack Boyle all unavailable for next week's game in Paris. Goodman also hinted that the door is still open for Bundiaki to return to the panel later in the campaign. The Connacht Centre handed a 4-week ban for verbally abusing and disrespecting match officials on several occasions following last weekend's URC defeat to Leinster. He'll miss this weekend's trip to Zebre, as well as the Six Nations games against France, Italy and England. Goodman explained that the Ireland setup have huge support for Bundy. I know he's a great character and he's made a mistake, Goodman said, and we're going to help him work through it. Munster and Ireland legend Alan Quinlan joined Gerry Gilroy and Colm Buhig on this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. He outlined how he feels Aki can use his time suspended to make amends with Ireland.
If I was him, I'd go away now in the next 4 weeks. I'd hire, or obviously work within the RFU protocols, but I'd probably hire someone to take me and do extra fitness sessions, and I'd just blast 4 weeks of incredible
condition.
Like a
new pre-season.
Turn the last couple of seasons. You know, he's 35, and say, right, it's easy for me to say this now, but I'd probably try and turn this into a positive in a sense. Say, right, I've learned my lesson. I'm out of action here 4 weeks, and I'm just going to go on a fitness blast for 4 weeks and actually come back, show the coaches that you've got something and you've worked your socks off to get back here, and try and get some sort of involvement in the last couple of games. Bundiaki's been outstanding for Ireland. He's been an incredible player. He's had an incredibly positive impact in Irish rugby. There is a propensity there to kind of be close to the line. He's had a couple of sending offs in his career, but they were for high tackles. Of course he'd be disappointed, I would imagine. And again, it's up to him to turn around now.
Cameron, it's win or bust for Celtic tonight.
Yes, indeed. Only a win will do for Celtic and guarantee them a place in the Europa League playoffs this evening, Will. Ahead of facing Utrecht tonight at Parkhead, Martin O'Neill's side are one place and 1 point away from elimination. Utrecht are one of the three sides in the competition without a win, but O'Neill is urging caution.
I've had a look at them, and despite their recent records, these boys can play. You know, they're definitely a very decent side. Coming here with nothing to concern themselves, just probably thinking, let's go out and enjoy it. And that's a danger in itself.
The team news from Parkhead this evening is that Liam Scales is in a back four for Celtic this evening. Johnny Kenny not in the squad at all. So, interesting.
Yeah, indeed. What else happened elsewhere in the Europa? I know some of the other English teams are also playing out the end of their league phase campaign here.
Yeah, so Nottingham Forest play Robbie Keane's Ferencváros, we have to call them now. The former Republic of Ireland striker says he's flattered to be linked with the Tottenham head coach role, but stresses that it's just speculation.
It's impossible not to be aware of anything these days, to be honest with you. And especially when you have two kids who's Tottenham fans. Nah, listen, Thomas Frank is a very, very good manager. I'll be honest with you, it goes over my head. Again, concentrating what I'm doing.
Elsewhere this evening, Aston Villa entertains Salzburg. All of tonight's games kick off at 8 o'clock.
Okay. Also, as we go down a little bit here, Team Ireland, because I know you've been talking about this on the Pat Kenny show as well, have got a team for the Winter Olympics. Naturally, because of our small team, we sometimes kind of forget about the Winter Olympics, don't we?
Yeah, it's it always sneaks up, and I think it's one of those, like the summer games, that you get invested in sports that you've otherwise no interest in the other 3 years of the Olympic cycle. But a four-strong contingent heading to Milano Cortina next week. Cross-country skier Thomas Maloney-Westgaard, alpine skiers Cormac Comerford and Annabelle Zerbe, and freestyle skier Ben Lynch, so a lot of skiers there. They will all travel to Italy for Ireland's ninth appearance at the Winter Games. They open in Milan next Friday and run until February 22nd.
Yeah, I've been watching heated rivalry over the last while, so kind of ice hockey has kind of gone on my radar as a result of that. Probably watch a bit of the ice hockey, and the nice thing is, with this being in Europe, it's on at the right time to watch it.
Could Denmark play US in the first round of the ice hockey?
Winner takes Greenland.
Yes, exactly. A nice Greenland derby there.
Don't rule out Donald Trump trying to put that clause into the game beforehand. We're hurtling towards the final of the Australian Open tennis as well.
Oh, brilliant tournament so far. Not really. Elena Rybakina will meet Irina Sabalenka in the final of the women's singles at the Australian Open. Rybakina defeated 6-seed Jess Pegula in straight sets in Melbourne earlier, while Sabalenka, ranked one in the world, is through to her fourth successive decider, the two-time champion, enjoying a straight sets victory over Elena Svitolina earlier today. If you want to know how exciting this tournament has been, the headline today is that Serena Williams maybe, possibly, potentially, will be making her comeback. It's not been a vintage Grand Slam.
So I'm fine with your cynicism, right? The flip side to this is, I love when you get a few shocks along the way, but the reality is the top seeds on both sides, in the women's and men's, are on course to play during the final.
Mm.
That's okay with me.
Okay.
If we get a great final, we get Carlos Alcaraz and we get Sinner going up against each other and they play another classic Grand Slam final, it doesn't matter that the rest of the tournament wasn't.
That gets fierce boring after a while if it's just those
two are
making
good.
It. You need at least a third party in there. And maybe Djokovic is the guy. Like, he's had plenty of rest over the last while. His quarterfinal opponent, Jacob Mensik, pulled out. So he went straight through, to the quarters, where he was losing to Lorenzo Musetti, and then Musetti sensationally retired. So he has a semi-final tomorrow against Jannik Sinner.
But when you're nearly 40, you're better off to be a lucky general than a good one. Right, that is almost our lot in the news round. I just want to read one more text, because I was actually trying to remember Anders Frisk's name earlier on. So don't forget, when Mourinho cost the Swedish ref Anders Frisk his career by lying about Frank Rijkaard entering the dressing room in the Champions League semi-final, box office or not, his reputation and his behaviour has been very questionable over the years. So that is it on the WhatsApp. You can keep them coming in on 087-9180-180. Or if you just want to text normally, 53106. Or why not leave us a comment on the YouTube Live and even later on in the programme as well. All right. We will be talking to Paul Murphy about hurling ahead of weekend two of the National Hurling League when we come back in a sec. But first of all, time for the cash machine.
Off the ball daily.